Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another exciting adventure on Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So just today, the Pentagon officially released 3 UFO videos. These videos have already been seen by pretty much everyone. They're the Tic Tac UFO videos. The first one off the coast of an aircraft carrier in 2004. The other two took place in 2015. The Pentagon said, quote, a thorough review determined that the release of these videos does not reveal any sensitive systems or capabilities or impinge on further investigation of unidentified aerial phenomena. The Pentagon also said, quote, the aerial phenomena observed in the videos remain characterized as unidentified. Spooky stuff. An Indonesian politician issued an edict to lock those who break quarantine up in haunted houses last week. At least 5 people have been locked in a haunted house, according to a report, which some of our listeners may recognize as a potential premise of a fantastic horror movie, albeit one that will inevitably be watered down a little in the U.S. remake. Quote, if there's an empty and haunted house in the village, the Regency had said, quote, put people in there and lock them up. One individual who is being punished in this way says he hasn't seen any ghosts so far, but went on to say, I know this is for everyone's safety, lesson learned. This isn't the first time Indonesians have used the supernatural to try to get people to obey quarantine. Last week, a police officer and his friend dressed up as traditional Indonesian ghosts and roamed the streets, moaning. Since the ghosts appeared, parents and children have not left their homes, the officer said. Points for creativity. And finally, on the topic of haunted houses, a house that was declared legally haunted, in fact, the landmark house in that regard, just went on the market for $1.9 million. Apparently, this New York home has been haunted for decades, but the original owners didn't find the poltergeist activity unbearable so much as a nuisance. The next owners disagreed. Upon discovering the house had a history of hauntings after signing a contract, they sued, arguing that hauntings should be disclosed, just like vermin infestations. After a lengthy legal battle, the New York State Supreme Court agreed in what is now referred to as the Ghostbusters ruling, arguing that since the previous owners had told other people about the hauntings and even published some of their experiences, there was a stigma surrounding the house the buyer should know about. Back to you, Chauncey.
Wow, I got to say, you know, as shocked as I was that the Navy came out and said that things were unidentified flying objects, you know, I feel like this is a step up of the Pentagon doing it, because now it's all of them. I mean, even the Coast Guard's on board now, because the Pentagon's all that.
Yeah, I mean, so I think these videos are all Navy-related. The 2015 ones might be Air Force, actually. I don't know. But in any case, now the Pentagon has said, yes, these videos are real. Here they are. I think up until right now, they basically disavowed any responsibility for these videos, except for the Navy. The Navy had said, yeah, these are legit, but now the Pentagon's saying it. So, like,
I don't even understand why they would say this, why they would come out and tell us
this. I don't understand anything about this story or their motivations or what is going on. It's so weird.
I hate to say this because, you know, I feel like I'm, like, the only liberal guy in the world that's actually, a firm, well, maybe I'm being a little extreme. I'm embellishing for poetic license. But, you know, that is proud of some of the history of the United States and its people. You know, and sure. So, you know, we have England on the forefront of finding the vaccination. We have China taking the lead in climate change at the Paris Agreement. Now we have the Pentagon just openly admitting that there's technology out there that's better than us or that we can't figure out. I don't know. I think it's a little weird. I think it's a little, I don't know. I feel like we're supposed to be aspiring to the shining city on a hill, at least, even if we're not living up to it. And, you know, you got to walk the walk if you're going to be that. And I'm a little disappointed that the Pentagon is throwing themselves under the bus.
Well, I think this idea of American exceptionalism is something that basically existed from, like, it's something that comes out of World War II, end of World War II, and really lasted in, like, material economic terms until the 70s, maybe. And, yeah, we still sort of believe it, but... I think we have to be practical.
We do have to be practical, but as a person, you know that how you deal with the situation and the way the world is and the way that you exist in it is very much based off of one's own attitude. It has nothing to do with right or wrong or reality or anything like that. It has a lot to do with just how you perceive the moment and how you deal with it moving forward. And so there's something to be said for having a positive attitude about yourself, yourselves, and the movement forward governing our life decisions and who we end up being. And that was the part that I like about that. Now, don't get me wrong. Obviously, there's some shady history there.
No, I know. I think that's true for individuals, maybe, but not, like, for governments making policy. I think that is basically, you know, no matter who you're talking about, no matter what country you're talking about, that is ultimately going to be cold, pragmatic, fact-based decision making, or at least it should be. Like, I think that's a lot better than the alternative, which is irrational, chaotic, willy-nilly decision making. But those are kind of the two modes I think that governments can do.
Well, I agree with that on some level of decision making, but I mean, on the level of like a cop saying, I'm not going in there, he might have a bigger gun. You know, there are some things you should probably keep to yourself. And when you're the military that protects our people, you probably shouldn't That's be true. Saying, oh, yeah, there's crap flying okay. around all over the place.
I see what you're saying. You and know? Yeah, it is don't wrong. I don't know why they said that. I don't know why they came out and said that.
So Legally Haunted, to bring us around to this, you know, I did not know that that was even possible in the United States for something to be legally haunted, for something to be legally something that we legally agree and in our legal world doesn't exist.
Right. And like when I learned about the rationale, like that made sense to me, you know. If you're buying a house where maybe your friends aren't going to want to come over because they're superstitious and they know it's haunted, then I guess that should be disclosed, sure. Like,
I don't know.
Because what the court was arguing was that it should be disclosed because these previous owners had already told a bunch of other people this place is haunted and they had already published about it. So what they should have disclosed was the stigma.
Yeah, but let's say I beat my family. I mean, there's obviously a whole lot of negative feelings going on there. Do I have to disclose to people like, well, you might not want to live there because, you know, I beat my family in there. You know, it's right. like, so there's a lot of negative feelings up in there.
That's true, but I think people...
All the neighbors heard me do it, too. You know, it's like they all heard, they screamed. There's a lot, you know, it's weird.
That's
Where
true,
does the
and
line
I don't know that you
draw?
Have to disclose that. Yeah, right. I think it's because ghosts are supposed to, like, stick around.
Right.
Whereas if the wife beater's gone, then, you know, theoretically the danger of wife beatings has passed.
Yeah, but what if he laid, you know, left a beer-stained tank top behind or something?
Well, then you... Call some guys to pick it up with tongs and take it.
No, he'll come back and get it. He's got to come back and get it. That's what I'm saying, you know. What if he left his wife's foot in a lockbox in the crawl space? I guess that one you do have to. So legally, do you have to tell somebody if a murder happened there? I bet you that's state to state, county to county.
I'll bet in some places you do. I don't know. I've never looked into it.
It's going to be really hard to sell my house.
Wait, a murder hasn't happened there yet. So that mean that I'm? Are you planning a murder in your house?
Well, do I have
we
to divulge
talk about
that?
This on air. Yeah,
do I have to
right.
divulge we'll, that?
We'll talk about this later in right. private. Our listeners don't need to know.
All right, but
it'll
in the
be
meantime,
a nice surprise.
In the meantime, we're coming up on break, and after that, we have our guest N.K. Cranda. We're going to be talking about abductions and experiences with the UFOs, with a bit of a focus on the trauma that it can cause these people. Should be pretty cool. Come on back.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
COVID-19 has forced our community to tread through unprecedented times. This is Tracy Edwards, CEO for Redding Rancheria. Through drought, wildfire, and devastation, we have banded together and became stronger. The challenges we are yet to face remain unknown, but what is known is that this is a community of survivors. Our citizens are dedicated to rallying behind the community in times of crisis. It is the same dedication to our community that will help us face COVID-19. We ask that you follow CDC guidelines and to continue practicing social distancing. We are all in this together.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert like Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, N.K. Kranda. How are you doing in this post-apocalyptic world? Are you, you know, what state are you in right now?
I live in the great state of Texas.
Texas. So how's Texas dealing with it? You know, being in California and Oregon, you know, we have some pretty...
Yeah, we have the stay-at-home orders and everything.
The stay-at-home orders, but what's going on there with you?
Well, we're supposed to be having the whole stay-at-home orders thing, so going to the grocery store is interesting. Like, I actually made my own mask. It's got aliens and everything on it, and, you know, working in healthcare and stuff, like, I wear it for their protection. And then people will come up to me, and they'll just say, like, oh, my God, you know, that mask isn't going to do anything, right? It's like, I'm wearing this for your protection, but I can take it off if you want me to.
Oh, my God.
And also having asthma and allergies, I have a dry cough year-round anyway, but if I cough in a grocery store, everyone's like, dramatic, look.
Yeah, me too. I smoked for years, and I don't think I'll ever get over the cough, you know? It's like, it's just, so every time I'm out, which isn't very often, I've been following the rules pretty well, but every time I'm out, I'm thinking, oh, God, you know? But, I can't believe people actually come up to you and say something to you about your mask.
Yeah. That's incredibly rude. What's their problem?
I don't know.
Didn't their mom teach them no manners?
I just want my Fruit Loops, man. Get out of my face.
Yeah, totally.
Sentiment we can all identify with.
So your focus seems to have changed here a little bit over the past. It's been about a year since we had you on, and
did I make it on?
What?
I know we planned something, and then I think we had to reschedule. I think this is my first time.
Huh. Well, I'll edit that out.
I have no memory of you being on, but I missed a few.
I remember trying to work it out, but you see, first off, I'll talk a little bit about you. You seem to have a lot of interest across the board as I was Facebook stalking you. So why the main focus on UFOs when you seem to have interest in cryptids there's a lot of I don't think witchcraft was the word. There's just a lot of stuff represented there. So why focus on UFOs? Yeah.
I have a huge range of esoteric interests and studies. Mm-hmm. I think I just ended up starting with UFOs. It was just the place that I started. I ended up volunteering as a secretary for a local MUFON chapter. That's how we met our mutual friend, William Pullen. I get to see him in the face and touch him. Hello, Angel Face. How are you? I actually went through the motions of becoming like a trained field investigator. I read the manual. Like I did the whole nine yards. I think it's just where I began. And then I ended up separating from MUFON and moving away from them and then doing my own private project of experiencer research and preservation. So I'm happy that I have those connections because I got to meet some really wonderful people like Peter Robbins and Earl Grey Anderson and William. And at the same time, I was like, here's a really fantastic repertoire of what not to do when you're talking to people that have huge potential trauma. So thank you, MUFON. I'm good. I think I'm a lot happier where I am now. But, I do everything from UFOs to cryptids. People contact me with paranormal experiences. And most of the time, it's a mixed bag when they talk to me. So it's necessary to have that knowledge in so many different areas, especially when, a couple months from now, I was supposed to do like a dying declaration preservation for one of the last Hopi elders on the whole reservation. So, I don't know. UFOs are cool. I like them, but it's not my whole bag.
Right. Well, the dying declaration kind of fits in with the experiences, the abductee experiences and the sighting experiences. You know, when people take that, you're talking about we can translate MUFON to just bureaucracy in general. I mean, this of course is going to happen anytime that there's some kind of bureaucracy. Do you have a set list of questions, a set list of things that you collect from them to get the data, or do you just try to get it all in the hopes that somebody else will figure out the data, or maybe that you will later?
No, and it's very important that I do that because so many MUFON investigators are leading and shaping that interview when they have a preset list of questions. So that's how I started, but I trained myself out of it to just begin a conversation, ripped it off from Julie Andrews. Let's start at the beginning, a very good place to start. And then that is where they can take off. Like maybe they'll start in childhood. Maybe they'll start in high school. Maybe they'll start out with a near-death experience. And then as they're talking, I can kind of, ask questions for additional information about this. But you don't want to stop their flow too much because then they may get caught up on something and forget about other things. I also interview a ton of can you tell I'm from California? I also interview the elderly. I interview a lot of veterans that are like on their deathbed. I really enjoy doing dying declarations. So sometimes they'll just take off like a shot and you've got to nod and show affirmative listening and just let them go. But I don't have a preset list of questions. As far as the research part, after I get their story down, then we can kind of walk back through it and I can ask them questions for understanding and also to help out with my research and a couple of my other researcher friends as well, so that we can get those markers together.
Right.
Yeah. Sort of my the impression I've gotten from MUFON sometimes is that they're an organization that's really like wants the trappings of scientific rigor because their legitimacy is so often questioned, as with every UFO organization. So I imagine that the set list of questions and everything is almost like, we have a process. But,
and that's what's so wonderful about being a preservationist is that you get to remove yourself from that investigative bind. And I have some really wonderful investigators. William Pullen and I are going to talk this weekend. I had a person contact me for a preservation, but they also had a ton of questions. And I'm like, well, I have a whole bunch of colleagues that I'd love to kind of bring in on this. And then they can do their own separate interviews, or they can look at this testimony from a completely different angle than I can. And it just makes it a much more full, multifaceted, scientific and logical, and also empathetic where I come into it. I'm really excited for that this weekend.
Hi, I'm Haley Clandenny.
And I'm Maurice Brown.
Join us for the Women of Vision show Tuesday nights from 6 to 7.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women, locally and globally. We connect female professionals and entrepreneurs and encourage women to collaborate and achieve their personal and professional goals.
With a spirit of integrity and excellence, we will motivate you to thrive, activating your unique ability. Join us Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR 96.5 FM.
Orchard Nutrition Center asks, what does it mean to be local?
It's the Little League baseball team. It's a smile and a wave from a neighbor you've known for years, helping out a stranger just because it's the right thing to do.
It's a lot like Orchard Nutrition Center, caring about the people and the community that you call home.
Orchard Nutrition Center, since 1982.
We're all in it together.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name. Knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision. Thankfully, it appears that Coachmaster Repair is an essential business and fully prepared to repair any minor or major damage to your vehicle. With the invasion of the coronavirus, Coachmaster is taking all precautions for the safety of our employees and our customers. We have closed all traffic through our lobby to ensure proper social distancing and will be disinfecting your vehicle upon arrival and before delivery. With the effects and response from the virus, we feel fortunate to be able to maintain all of our employees. They will be here to provide all services required for a proper and complete repair. These are uncharted territories. Let's all work together for a full, safe, and prosperous recovery. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I'm Carlene Niver, and I have some exciting news about my restaurant, Deja Vu, voted best breakfast. We are now serving beer and wine to complement your experience with us. Try one of our many flavors of mimosas, or try one of our new delicious creations, like Morning Sunshine, our version of a screwdriver. For our coffee lovers, we are known for our cozy atmosphere with a mixture of traditional and specialty drinks. I invite you to start your day with us, whether you are craving breakfast or lunch. Located in the historic Lorenz Hotel in the heart of downtown Reading, on California Street, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you soon.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You are listening to N.K. Cranda here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss UFO sightings, experiences, and abductions.
You know, in order for science to happen, there has to be metrics, there has to be stuff, there has to be provable stuff, or at least anecdotal stuff. But then you use the word to refer yourself as a preservationist as opposed to an investigator. And now on an anthropological level, you know, I see a huge amount of importance to that as well. So I totally get where this is coming. Now, I've heard these complaints about these groups that collect this data, and you know, I have no connection with any of them, so I don't know how I feel about it. But I do feel that there has to be some sort of collection of anecdotal knowledge to get the larger science community to even give a damn, you know, because they really historically haven't much, and they're starting to a little more that's happening, you know. I guess the argument could be made that the collection of the stories and the preservationist aspect is part of what's getting them there as well. I think there's a big power to hearing that person's story. How many of these people that you collect their stories, do they mind you sharing them, or do you file them away in a locker to never be seen again, or?
Please edit out all of my uhs. I'm so tired. Some of them are open to sharing. They're like, I want to get this out there. And I think a lot of it is that they've had that pain for so long of this weird thing happened to me and I can't talk about it. I can't tell my teachers about it. I can't tell my wife about it. I could lose my job. They'll probably send me to a mental institution. A lot of them that come to me now, they're like, look, this is my story. I want it out there. I want people to know that they're not as alone as they think they are. So those are really empowering emotional preservations that I do. And a lot of them, I've walked through them with me, like on a Mad Scientist podcast with Chris Cogswell, I took an experiencer, Kyle, with me so that he could tell his own story with his own voice. That was a pretty powerful couple of episodes. He had been through everything from a serious near-death experience as a kid where it was extremely traumatic to seeing a UFO in his yard, to actually waking up outside of his house in his parents' back 40. They thought that he was sleepwalking, so they put double-keyed deadbolts on the doors. And he was much too young to be able to open and get up and out of windows, so he said he would just wake up in the woods and run back to his house just screaming and pounding on the doors for his parents to let him in. And they were like, the doors were always closed. We had no idea how you got outside. Then how he was able to move through that, you know, because 20 years ago there were no resources. You couldn't just hop on the internet and go look at Reddit and talk to other people. I was like, so you're a very healthy individual, you know, you seem to be pretty much sane. You have a really good job. Like, how did you survive this? How did you go about processing those experiences and not letting it ruin your life? Yeah, it was wonderful. So those are probably some of my favorite cases where they want to put it down, but they also want it to be shared to help other experiencers.
Yeah. So speaking of cases, and you know, we were talking about collecting data and similarities in your preservationist role, have you found similarities that you didn't find before?
One more time.
In the preservationist role, you're taking their large stories, and so you're getting a lot more information out of them other than the answering of the questions and the leading of the conversation. Have you found any similarities from doing it that way that maybe you wouldn't have seen before or wouldn't have been so obvious before? You know, are there these similarities that have stood out to you in people's stories at this point?
Absolutely. And we're also, when I was going through MUFON training and everything else, they have their own experience or research program, and they have their own set list of markers where you can kind of check the boxes of all of these different people. For me, yeah. When I went off and started doing my own work, you know, I'm a big trauma advocate that, you know, honor yourself because you survived, is that once these people had some sort of trauma, that these experiences started to kind of explode, or maybe they got much more intense, or maybe they started to pay attention to them more. And I think I went over that on Hysteria 51 about how I backed it up with science that trauma actually changes the neural pathways of your brain. It rewires you. So I was wondering, you know, is trauma kind of a door opener to having some of these experiences? I noticed that it made people a lot more empathetic. They were much kinder. They were much calmer. They were always so willing to help. Like, I've had experiencers checking on me from all over the United States. It's been so heartwarming. Like, do you need help? Do you need food? Do you need help with utilities? I'm like, no, I'm okay. Also, that most of the experiencers that I talk to, it's rarely ever just one thing. So they're called multi-phenomena experiencers. So it's never just, for me, it's never just one UFO sighting. It's never just one, I saw this thing in the woods. It's a whole timeline of different things that are coming around and kind of interacting with them, which is not what I was expecting. You know, MUFON trained me to look at the UFOs, look at the pictures. If there's orbs, great. If there's trauma, don't worry about it. We're here for UFOs. And it's so much more than that.
You find that trauma is a common thing with these? I mean, personally, if I just looked up and saw a UFO, I don't think I would experience trauma. I would feel maybe excitement or elated, or I guess maybe fear if I was a different person. I mean, I have to understand that. But do you find that trauma is a common?
I imagine a lot of these people have experiences that are somewhat more than looking up and seeing a UFO.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, because I mean, I'm sort of excluding that kind of experience. Outside of that, is trauma a common aspect of these experiences?
That's kind of two answers to that, is that, you know, of course, having an experience like that can be very traumatizing. Sometimes it's awe-inspiring. It's wonderful. It encourages people to write books and help others and things like that. Other times when I talk about a traumatic event, that could be something that has happened in their childhood or a near-death experience. A lot of times I notice the activity picking up a lot during puberty. Or when I interview kids, I'm one of the only people out there that will interview children, is that who do we ignore the most in society? Kids and the elderly. Oh, you're just making stuff up. Oh, you're just doing it for attention.
Hell, I ignore those two around my house.
So it's if you actually just sit down with one of them and just let them talk, and, you know, they tell some pretty incredible stuff. And I've kept tabs on a couple of kids that I have interviewed when they were young. And when they got to puberty, their parents will tell me, like, yeah, this activity, like, it petered down. We thought it was just a one-time thing. It explodes again. So there's also that biological aspect of it. And then a lot of the times, you know, some people will say that something happened to them when they were 20. They were abducted or they saw a cryptid out in the woods. And then when they're older and in their 70s and life is kind of starting to slow down and everything else, their activity will start picking up as well. I don't know. I don't know if it has to do with brain function. I don't know if it has to do with, you know, just when you're an adult, you're a lot busier. You have a lot more of your bandwidth being used up on reality and day-to-day things. But talking to kids and talking to the elderly is like my peanut butter and jelly. They're my favorite.
You know, I was going to agree with the two things that you just said, because before puberty, I probably have about 5 or 6 strong memories, and in the last 10 years of having to work so hard and raise a family, I'd probably have about 10 or 12 strong memories, because those age brackets are either, you know, mentally squirrely because you're coming around, or mentally squirrely because you're working constantly, you know, so that definitely makes sense.
I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
California lawmakers created a new statute in 2018 preventing public employers from disparaging unions. The statute was designed to undercut the 2018 Supreme Court Janus decision, which gave public employees an opt-out right from paying any union dues. Now, seven elected officials in California are suing the California Public Employment Relations Board for violating their First Amendment rights of free speech. Well, Pacific Justice Institute will provide free legal help to any employees who, as a matter of conscience, seek to opt out from paying union dues.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
You are listening to N.K. Cranda here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss UFO sightings, experiences, and abductions.
If you need help, get serious help. Like, if you've already come to terms with this, if you're okay, if you can function through your daily life and it's not bothering you that much, then I would encourage you to go forward with an investigation or with preservation or something like that. But you don't want to mess around with something as important as your brain. You really don't. It's not worth your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is a Christian, very Christian, to a fault. She's very Christian. And that's my own terrible mother-in-law / Christian sense of humor. And she has a counselor who is also Christian, and that helps her, you know, because they can connect on their belief. If I were to have a Christian counselor, I don't think that I would feel that I connected with that person very well, or I might feel, or if a Christian person had a non-Christian counselor, they might look at that person's experiences as being delusional as opposed to being a religious experience. And so when these people go to counseling, are there counselors who have had experiences or are true believers or at least receptive to the possibilities? You get where I'm going with this.
Definitely. And any seasoned counselor out there that's been around and has experience, they've had experiences that they cannot explain. Like just going through a hospital at night, you can feel how weird it is just talking to EMT staff and stuff. If you come to a counselor and they're so close-minded that they don't even want to talk about that, please go find a different counselor. I promise that they're out there. There's been things where sometimes people find help in group counseling and they have so many incredible phenomena, like they'll start having shared dreams. They'll start being able to remember each other's family members' names. Like, I've heard a lot of really incredible stories from professionals, and it's not to change the subject too much, but it's sad how far behind the United States is compared to spirituality and psychology and the way those things naturally intermesh, say like China or Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my friends, she was a very close friend. I met her through the Preservation Project, but she actually ended up getting institutionalized by her family for a 72-hour watch. And she was completely fine. She was not having a mental break. She was just talking about this stuff for the first time. So yeah. The interns did not know what to do with her. So they ended up actually taking her to the head of medicine for that mental institution. And he's like, okay, like, I understand where you're going with this. I don't think that you're crazy. We're going to release you from your 72-hour hold. But the things that she was talking about, like vibrational frequencies and the way that she was moving through this and the way that her experiences were escalating, he said, you're going to have to pursue like Eastern medicine to find anything close to what you are looking for. And I was shocked that she got that response, because it is very rare that a psychiatrist will be like, hey, I don't think I can handle this. I'm not right for you. But I wish that we weren't so conservative as a country that, you know, it's okay to have these experiences. It's been happening for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're crazy because you could see auras or you notice vibrational frequencies, or when you walk in a room, like a radio goes crazy.
Right.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. And even just on the most clinical of examines of that, good English chunks, that you're not a harm to yourself or anyone else. Why would somebody be put in that situation that wasn't harming? I mean, believe me, if we could institutionalize people for being irritating, I would be the only one left on the damn planet. You know, it's like, that's not a good enough reason to institutionalize somebody.
Correct. And so many people label this as attention-seeking behavior.
So?
These experiencers, just attention-seeking behavior. They're just bored. They're making shit up. And I'm like, so no. a true experiencer, one of these people that has been through the mill, like my Rendlesham experiencer, I'm like, nobody would want this. Nobody would want this. You would not want this happening in your life. It's immensely stressful and disruptive. Like, do you know how much they crave that they could just be normal and not have that thing happen to them?
Right.
So every time I hear it, like, oh, that person's just attention seeking. They just want to get their face out on the radio and everything else. There's a lot of ways to get out there on the radio without saying that all these terrible things happen to you in the woods.
Yes, I agree. I always find that to be an interesting just huck around motivation that, they want to be famous. You know, I've met a lot of people in my life. A lot of them are doing stuff like you and I are doing. I don't think either of us really want to be famous. Sure. Would we like to make more money from what we're doing? Yes. I think everybody would say yes to that. Because more than zero would be nice. But, fame, I don't know. Fame is not a motivation that I've seen in a lot of people. I've only seen it in very, very few. Okay. Well, we are coming up on the end here. So let's say people have had experiences and they want to find out more, or they want to share their story with you and get their story out there. How do they get in touch with
you? I am on Facebook as NK Kranda, but also, I have a Gmail. So preserveyourexperience@gmail.com. I'm very accessible. I usually return emails within 1 to 3 days. But one of the things that I'm looking for is I'm shifting focus from my preservation project right now, and I'm actually shifting focus to a survival guide for experiencers, for people that are going through these things. And just I have come across so many wonderful tools just to help you kind of cope, to help you process, to help you find the right counselor, even just how to start talking about these things. So I would really love it if some people could start reaching out to me saying, you know, yes, I am an experiencer and this thing happened to me. This is how I survived it. This is how I put myself through the motions and got myself through it. This is how I got up in the morning. This is how I took care of my kids. There's a lot of really incredible survivors out there that go through these things. And I'm in the process of writing the book, but I would like to have more variety, because I've noticed throughout all of this research that it's really about families. It's not about the individual as much as I thought that it was. It's about people that, you know, maybe they had experiences as a kid. They were able to move past it. But now that they have children, what do you do when your six-year-old comes running into the room screaming that there's an owl outside their window and it won't go away?
Yeah.
It's really, incredibly frightening, and they just feel so isolated and so alone. And I'm hoping to put this book out there, not to make money, but to help people be like, hey, take it or leave it. If one story helped you, fantastic. If you got one tool from this, you know, honor yourself because you survived. That's a tool. If you survive it, you get to define it. That's another tool. And I've got some really wonderful writers and my experiencers, and I just want to get it out there. So if you have a story or if you have an experience, you just want to say hi, preserveyourexperience@gmail.com. Come talk to me. I'll say hi.
Awesome. All right. Well, you've been listening to N.K. Kranda here on Radio Wasteland. You want to find out more about her? Look up N.K. Kranda on Facebook or preserveyourexperience@gmail.com. All this information will also be available at radiowasteland.us. And until next time, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.